Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. For today, we are going to revisit our ongoing conversation on the emerging markets. That means joining me here once again in studio. Glad to welcome back Alejo Zerwanko, the Chief Investment Officer for Emerging Markets Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. Alejo, thank you for dropping by. Always great to do these in person. So nice to be at the mics with you today.
So happy to be here. Thank you for having me, Dan.
And you're joining us today, Alejo, because I know as we're speaking today, the latest Investing in Emerging Markets, a monthly publication, is now available for our listeners, our clients, up on ubs.com/CIO. The title for the April edition, Resilience Tested, Emerging Markets Navigate the Energy Shock. So we'll spend some time diving into that. Also, congratulations are in order because I know your team, the Chief Investment Office team here at UBS, has been recognized by Euromoney, having been awarded the 2026 Euromoney Private Banking Award for Chief Investment Office Teams in Latin America. So congratulations to you, the entire team, well-deserved, and wanted to throw that out there at the start.
Thank you. Very excited about that as well.
So let's dive right into our conversation today, Alejo, because I know history shows investors have often been rewarded for staying the course during geopolitical shocks. Of course, we've been monitoring the ongoing developments in the Middle East, but with the current energy crisis and the Strait of Hormuz effectively closed as we're recording today, Alejo, do you think this time is different? Perhaps what signal should investors watch for to know if resilience is starting to crack?
You're spot on, Dan. We've done the work. And if you look at history, you're typically better off fading major geopolitical shocks. Let me give you a few numbers. The S&P 500 delivered median positive returns of 10% the year following major geopolitical shocks since 1940. Positive returns took place nearly 80% of the time. So if history is any guide, geopolitics might impact markets in the very near term, doesn't do so medium to longer term. Now, we got to contemplate the possibility that this time might be a little different. After all, the International Energy Agency is describing the current energy crisis as the worst in history. So I think the likelihood this particular shock has a lasting mark on asset prices is going up. The way I see it, the global economy is being held in a chokehold. Vital oxygen is being cut off. The good news is the world entered this crisis in relatively good health, solid economic growth, manageable inflation, robust corporate fundamentals. Yet, as you know, Dan, even the fittest will eventually suffer lasting damage if they cannot breathe. The way to analyze this crisis is to maybe identify key transmission channels. Mm-hmm. And I think there's two primarily, energy prices and financial conditions. And they are interrelated if you consider the fact that high energy prices are increasing the likelihood that central banks are forced to respond with interest rate hikes because of the expectation of higher inflation. You can see how, you know, both energy and financial conditions are tightly related. Consider this, the market repricing has been so aggressive in recent days that central banks in Europe, in the UK, in Switzerland, in Japan are all discounted to hike interest rates in the next 12 months quite aggressively. And the Fed right now, according to market pricing, is discounted to stay put in the next 12 months. So there's a lot going on. History indicates that you should stay put, but we are at the margin. The longer this crisis goes on for, they're risking a little bit portfolios to be mindful and open to the possibility of this time being a little different.
Well, very helpful context to set the stage. Just looking at how asset prices have been responding. Now, emerging market bonds, they have held up well despite the turmoil. However, equities have been more exposed. What factors, Alejo, are driving this divergence, and how should investors think about positioning in emerging markets given the current risks and opportunities?
Let's start with emerging market bonds. Indeed, very resilient. If you track the spread over U.S. Treasuries that these bonds offer, they are only marginally wider since the war began over 3 weeks ago. And we think this resilience is justified and can be sustained. Consider the robust emerging market fundamentals, including lower fiscal deficits, fairly strong monetary policy frameworks, high international reserve positions, pretty good current account balances, and anchored inflation expectations. In addition, in the emerging market bonds world, Latin America has a pretty large weight of roughly 35%, and this region is detached from conflict and includes net energy exporters such as Brazil, Argentina, Colombia, Venezuela. Now, the equity space, Dan, has been more exposed, without a doubt. Emerging market equities are down more than 10% in U.S. dollar terms from their peak. This has been driven mainly by profit-taking in some trades, such as the tech trade, and the much more significant exposure to energy imports from Asia. And Asia is the lion's share of the emerging market equity universe. Now, on a forward-looking basis, then, if the Strait, of course, the Strait of Hormuz, begins to reopen in weeks rather than months, mm-hmm. we think attractive yields in emerging market bonds should help deliver high single-digit returns through the end of the year, well above cash, and therefore we maintain an attractive recommendation on emerging market bonds. On the equity space, we expect low to mid-teens upside by December. This supported by continued earnings growth, some degree of multiple re-rating. But at the same time, we think some degree of taking risk off the table is in order in the equity space. We have, for instance, downgraded Indian equities to neutral, considering the country's very high dependence on imported energy. Roughly 90% of Indian energy is imported, 40% comes from the Strait of Hormuz, mm-hmm. so very exposed right there. And by and large, Dan, I would say we do expect resilience in the asset class, but this has limits. The longer this conflict goes on for, the higher the energy prices, the tighter financial conditions are globally, at some point, you know, emerging market fundamentals will start to suffer.
You alluded to this a bit already, Alejo. From a regional standpoint, within emerging markets, LATAM, Latin America, stands out as a relative safe haven. Tell us a bit more about the prospects for the region.
Hard to believe that you would call Latin America a quote-unquote safe haven, but I think to some degree that's what we're seeing today. The region is geographically detached from most geopolitical fault lines. And with a global focus on security, people are really looking at the energy security, food security, technological security, financial security side of the spectrum. Latin America offers at least partial answers to the security anxieties. Do you want oil? There's plenty of it. Do you want food? You know, a major global supplier. Are you interested in technological security through lithium, copper, rare earths? Plenty of stocks of these critical minerals in Latin America, and even some gold when it comes to financial security. So I think the region is commanding increased global investor and policymaker attention for good reasons. And in addition, you've got domestic policy improving at the margin. If you think about leaders in Latin America, we're getting a new crop of market-friendly figures, represented by the cases of Chile, Argentina, Bolivia, Paraguay, Ecuador, El Salvador, among others. And crucially, there are elections around the corner in Peru, in Colombia, And later in the year in Brazil, we might see a further reinforcement of center-right, market-friendly policies in the region. These are leaders that might be better able to take advantage of this global interest. So I think Latin America will continue to attract interest and attention. Asset class performance has been very good in 2025 and even so far in 2026, war included.
Mm-hmm.
We think this pattern is extrapolatable, meaning you should expect good performance from here onwards as well.
Now, Alejo, in this context, again, I want to highlight that your team recently received an important recognition as the best chief investment office team in Latin America, that according to the 2026 Euromoney Private Banking Award. So once again, congratulations. What does this award mean?
We're super happy, Dan, and I think it's simply a recognition of the focus and energy that we put on studying, analyzing, understanding emerging markets at large, and in this case, Latin America specifically. Just last year, 2025, over 300 reports focusing on emerging markets in Latin America, over 70 podcasts with you and in Spanish, in Portuguese, in the LATAM Access channel mm-hmm. that we also maintain. So we want to be at the center of the investor conversation when it comes to emerging markets in Latin America. And, you know, every day we come in focused on that. When it comes to this specific region, we are on top of developments in Brazil, Mexico, Chile, Colombia, Peru, Argentina, Venezuela, Dominican Republic, Panama. We have official coverage of all these countries. And I think the award is simply, you know, recognition of these efforts.
Well, I've had the pleasure of working with you and several members of the team over the years. You all do impactful work and do want to highlight the LATAM Access podcast channels in Portuguese and Spanish, both available on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. So for those who are interested, definitely recommend giving them a listen. Though, Alejo, thank you for joining us again. I want to highlight the report Alejo has been citing today, the Monthly Investing in Emerging Markets publication series, the title for the month of April, Resilience Tested, Emerging Markets Navigate the Energy Shock, is available now up on ubs.com/CIO for clients of UBS. Please be sure to reach out to your UBS financial advisor if you would like to receive a copy of the publication directly. Though, Alejo, thank you again, and do look forward to picking back up with our emerging markets conversation next month.
Great to be here. Thank you, Dan.
Absolutely.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/workingwithus. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.